You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
We stumbled across Daxon during a completely different investigation into malware. When we did, and we dug into it, we uncovered a lot more.
That's Vikram Thacker. He's a technical director with Symantec's Threat Hunter team. The research we're discussing today is titled Daxon, Stealthy Backdoor Designed for Attacks Against Hardened Networks. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Well, let's walk through the story together. I mean, you all are out there doing, as you say, some other work, and you happen upon this. What happened next?
So the first thing we did was to take a look at the suspicious activity that was happening on a computer. Now, think of this as your computer doing everything that you intended to do, and then some. So we looked at the component that was causing this little extra bit of communication. And so when we looked into it, at first sight, it was extremely difficult to even understand what it's doing, because as different pieces of malware or viruses or worms, they go about, this piece of malware was designed in a way where it was extremely obfuscated. So it's as though the author of this malware took extreme measures to ensure that any researcher, or even when this malware was caught, was in the hands of somebody else, they wouldn't be able to understand what it was truly meant to do. So it took us a long time to be able to what we call analyze, which essentially means that we take a file and then we tear it apart and then try to understand what it was truly meant to do and what features or what capabilities it has. And that took us, in this particular case, more than a few weeks. Let's leave it at that.
Now, was it the file that you discovered first, or was it the activity? Which led to which?
So we discovered the activity first, and then when we looked a little closer to understand where the the activity was being orchestrated from. And this usually is one file or a set of files on somebody's computer. In this particular instance, we stumbled across one specific file which was playing that role of generating this extra activity on that computer.
And what did that activity look like?
So before I get into what this activity looks like, I'll give a little bit of background. What normally happens is whenever a foreign or a unauthorized piece of a file or a executable or an application gets onto somebody's computer, it tends to be a little noisy. Like, so it opens up the computer to more things. It starts looking for files on your computer. It might look for credit cards stored on different computers. So there's a bit of, think of it as noise, which is being generated in the computer world. Daxin, or what we noticed in this particular case was, while there's suspicious activity, Daxin was trying to hide every single thing that it was doing under the umbrella of some existing legitimate application within the computer. So if somebody just looked at the computer with an untrained eye, they would not be able to even spot Daxin's existence because everything would be looking normal. Like, hey, there's communication happening through Chrome or Internet Explorer or Edge or Slack or something. And nobody would be able to see that, hey, there is something happening in addition to what these legitimate applications are doing. So in our particular case, we were able to spot it because, well, we've been in the business for a little while.
Mm.
And that is where we noticed that Daxin was trying to add its behavior under the umbrella of an existing application or legitimate application within the Windows environment.
And how was it doing that? What was it trying to piggyback onto?
So that's really interesting. So while we were able to see that there was some activity going on, we were not able to so-called capture it so that we can look at it later. What we eventually landed up with is we just had this one file, which we today call Daxin. And our aim at that point was to understand what is Daxin's capabilities. Because we'd already seen that, it was doing some stuff, but we did not capture it, or we weren't able to contain it, so we weren't able to look at that in the lab by ourselves. And from a capability standpoint, what we noticed was Daxin, as a piece of malware, was designed with one and only one sole intention, which is stay under the radar of any security software, stay under the radar of anybody ever noticing, and do whatever it needs to do under the guise of an existing application so that nobody ever notices that it even exists. So that was the ulterior motive. And it was pretty apparent in our subsequent findings, which is when we look at Daxin, Daxin has been coded in a manner where it remains extremely stealth so that it can be used in extremely long cyber campaigns against entities. So when I say long, I'm talking months, if not years long. So that just means that Daxin was intended to be deployed against targets or cyber targets where it could be deployed and then it could be used for espionage purposes over an extremely long period of time rather than just steal some information across a couple of days or a week.
And so what is the spectrum of functionality that it had? What sort of capabilities were there?
So as an example, Daxin plays what we call man in the middle. So it essentially means that if your computer has any degree of communication which is happening with some legitimate service, so think of it as people opening up their browsers and going over to a mail portal and logging in. So at that stage, their computer is talking to a computer owned by another entity, whether it's Google, Microsoft, or somebody else out there. Daxin has the ability to intercept every single piece of that communication going out of your computer and coming back into your computer. So Daxin is examining every single packet which is going out and in, examining it, looking at it and saying, and making a determination of whether it is of any value to Daxon's operators. And if it is, then it's taking action, or it would do things like, hey, I'm just going to send this email over to my masters, or, hey, I'm just going to steal these this little piece of information, send it over to my master. So that is one capability of Daxon. And that's one of its primary ones. There are a few others just like this, which were meant to be able to hijack networks where not every computer within the network communicates with the internet. So it has that ability also.
And as you mentioned, it's very careful in what it does. So am I correct that when it reaches out to its commanders, if you will, that it's doing so in a very stealthy way?
It is. So I took the example of somebody using a web browser and going over to a webmail portal. So let's take, for example, that somewhere in there, Daxon comes across a piece of information that it needs to send over to its masters. It would do it using the existing same channels. It would send that information out from the person's computer under the umbrella of using the web browser. So to the untrained eye, it would look like the web browser is just sending some information or some packets over to some server, whether it's in Norway or Sweden or China or Germany, it doesn't really matter. And so when it does it using the exact same protocol or the same technique as a web browser would normally use, the chances of somebody noticing that, hey, some information has gone to the wrong commander or the wrong server is extremely low. And that's what Daxon makes use of.
Do you have any guesses as to how the computer initially got infected here?
So we looked at a few dozen cases over the past decade, and there is no one way that the attackers were able to get onto the computers. In some cases, they were able to leverage weaknesses in, let's say, Exchange servers. And just because it's public information, the security vulnerabilities are public information, these computers were not patched to the latest and greatest available versions. The attackers just made use of that existing public knowledge to be able to get Daxon onto these computers. Now, we know that is not the only way that they got on, but there's no single way. They pretty much used anything at their disposal and customized it to different environments and then got on.
And Daxon has some history here. I mean, yours was not the first discovery of it?
So we discovered Daxon as the first people to discover it, but there is some history, like you pointed out. When we started looking at Daxon, we obviously looked around to see if any of the other security vendors or researchers out there had mentioned anything of this sort. And the answer came back as no. And so nobody had. But we have an ability to go back and retroactively look at events that have come across our radar in the past to see if Daxon has been around. And so we go back and we can see that, okay, well, for the last 5 years, every year we see about two or three victims or at least targets, but it stops out there. So we expanded our search by saying, okay, instead of just looking for Daxon, can we look for parts of Daxon? Can we find parts of code that may have existed prior to that 5-year mark? And it did. It actually goes back all the way to 2009. So when we look at it 2009, we stumbled across a blog that Microsoft had posted back in 2012, just 10 years ago, about a piece of malware that they called X4L. That was just a completely different name. And when we compared X4L to Daxon, we realized that X4L was a previous incarnation of what we were looking at as Daxon. So that's how we made that connection. Now, X4L, there was a blog written about it by Microsoft, but it doesn't exist as of today. Like, I think they deleted it somewhere along the way for reasons unknown. Also, there is a mention of the word X4L in a very tenuous manner on related to the Shadow Broker's leaks. So, but that goes another degree of separation, actually. So.
Well, in terms of who we might think is behind this, what was your thoughts there?
So based on two or maybe three factors, we said with very high confidence that this piece of malware, Daxon, was authored and most likely operated also by a group operating out of China. Now, we don't know what specific group they are, but during the course of the research, we were able to find at least one primary author of Daxon. And even though we don't make that person or that entity's name public, we are aware of this person's hand in developing Daxon over the years.
So in terms of mitigation here, how do you recommend organizations protect themselves against this sort of thing?
So it's extremely hard to be able to put a trained eye upon every single computer out there. So in terms of mitigation, all I would advise large organizations, and especially organizations that have a role to play in geopolitics, a role to play in government function, to take stock of different files on their computer. See if audit their PowerShell logs, audit ACLs or permission logs, which keep track of whether a particular asset on a computer, like think of it as a file, has been given permission to some unauthorized person. So generally, it would be a lot of good hygiene, good auditing recommendations from our side. Like, you know, I can't say, hey, if you were to take these particular three steps, you will be in the clear, because Daxon is clearly designed to evade and fly under the radar as far as it really can.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems to me like this is one of those examples where you really have to have defense in depth, right? I mean, when something is trying to be as stealthy as this is and seems to be effective at it, I mean, even in this case, it was a bit of luck that you all came across this from the outset.
I think you're right. I think, you know, we definitely just got a little lucky and stumbled across it. That's reflective of the fact that this has existed since 2009 and nobody's been able to discover it since. I mean, it goes to show that, you know, the author and the operators were very successful in both being able to use it as well as keep it away from any public mention or discovery for an extremely long period of time. So that's why in our eyes, we believe that Daxon was designed and used strictly for espionage purposes against geopolitically sensitive or relevant organizations, rather than what we commonly see Chinese actors performing, which is intellectual property theft. So Daxon does none of that, and all the targets that we've seen till date have an extremely sensitive geopolitical stance.
Our thanks to Vikram Thacker from Symantec's Threat Hunter team for joining us. The research is titled Daxon, Stealthy Backdoor Designed for Attacks Against Hardened Networks.
And now, a message from CyberBit. Mastering cybersecurity is like mastering a sport. You build muscle memory through rigorous practice, then you train as a team to foster cohesion while operating under pressure. Like athletes, cybersecurity professionals thrive on hands-on simulation. But traditional courses, certifications, and open-source labs won't build you a winning team. You need CyberBit. CyberBit offers a hyper-realistic simulation environment for your SOC, IR, and C-suite to refine your skills, all using the market-leading SIEMs, EDRs, firewalls, and WAFs they use every day. CyberBit is offering CyberWire listeners a free live fire exercise. Sign up your team now at cyberbit.com/cyberwire.
The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland at the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karpf, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabi, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.